sing a song to the mother, sing a song to the earth, sing a song of hope and joy, a song of rebirth. Growing hope swirls around us in spite of darkened skies, held fast on our mother's lap. We know her love will be revived. Let all who hear rejoice again. We rise up to the call, confronting evil with the truth. We open a door for hope swirls around us in spite of darkened skies, held fast on our mother's lap. We know her love will be revived. Let all who hear rejoice again. We rise up to the call, confronting evil with the truth. We open a door for all. Sing a song to the mother. Sing a song to
the mother. Hi, this is Janie Reisner, and welcome once again to Women's Voices. I thank you so much for being here. I want to read you a page from Patriarchy. My eldest child and daughter, Cynthia, recently celebrated her 53rd birthday, and I just turned 74. I was 21 years old when she was born, and I gave birth to my third and last child when I was 24. Suddenly, after a childhood spent in nature, living happily with my parents on our farm, where there was no hint of violence or uproar or manipulation in our family life, here I was with three little children, living with a man whose emotional development was twisted and deeply self-absorbed. His only concern was how he felt. His needs were the ones that counted. He needed children not to cry or want things. He needed it not to rain if he planned to play golf. And if these things did happen, he blamed the children. He blamed the rain. He would cook breakfast on Sunday mornings, and it ended up being a nightmare, always, with our three little children crying and running to their rooms, and his having a fit about something that didn't please him. As I stood by watching helplessly, without power or words, wondering how I would ever get out of this madness. This page out of my early married life demonstrates what it is like for a mother living in a patriarchal world. Why didn't I speak up? Why didn't I say, "Stop acting like that"? Because I was afraid. And I had no models around me for speaking up. It took me 12 often dreadful years for me with my children to get out of that marriage to my doctor husband, and then only possible with the help of an extraordinarily intuitive psychiatrist who skillfully protected me and guided me out the door to freedom. I realize this little story is mild in terms of abusive behavior in comparison to many mothers' stories. I'm trying to bring into consciousness what that time was like. Why did it happen? Why did he dare behave like that, and I didn't call him on it? Because he had been given the power by the patriarchal order, and I had not. I was the underling. I was not his equal. How strange. And of course this continues today in horrific violence against women and children all around the world. We all know that as a child, your security is based in your mother. You hide behind your mother's skirts. You run to your mother when something scares you. You love to be near your mother, and you instinctively trust her to protect you. In the animal kingdom, the maternal instinct of the mother is known and respected. No one gets between the mother bear and her cub. That's how it's supposed to be. Mothers protect their own children. However, since that can't happen in these patriarchal parts, our children are abused right before our eyes, and we do nothing, like I did nothing when my husband was verbally abusive and aggressive in his behavior with my children. The word relationship didn't exist back then in Davenport, Iowa. The word abuse didn't exist either, and certainly one had never heard those words, sexual abuse. None of that. I have no idea what he might have done if I had said, "Enough. When are you going to grow up?" He probably would have knocked me over. But it is the truth. He was allowed to not clean up his childish behavior by the patriarchal culture, for it condones his behavior as a man. I couldn't call him on it and say, "You aren't fit to be a father." Scholar Rhianne Eisler is not alone in pointing out what patriarchal structure has done to life on Earth for the past 5,000 years. She is one among many, mostly but not all, women scholars who describe our much longer, nonviolent history before patriarchy, the one written out of our awareness by the folks in charge. We humans have an extraordinary past, generally peaceful, rich with creativity, and deeply connected to the earth and nature and her seasons, with deep maternal values, which have been ignored and written out of most everything, just as if it didn't exist. Rhianne Eisler's life work has been about researching our prehistory, unraveling how we moved from a peaceful and egalitarian world into a violent and warring culture. And she picks apart the threads of violence and abuse against women and children, which begins in the home, through school, and is reinforced in most every aspect of our children's lives, particularly little boys, forcing them to obey the abuser, which creates great internal rage, and to guard against and repress their own girl-like and caring feelings, a huge wounding, and devalue their mothers and all women, and from that devalue the other, whether by skin color, race, economic standing, and the earth itself. It is a power over model that rules our day. It has been my intention from the beginning for my part of Women's Voices to bring women to the airwaves who are devoting their lives to pointing out our prehistory, to pointing out the great loss of life from patriarchal rule, speaking to our need to awaken to the sacred feminine. My guest this evening, Leslie Delamadre, is the author of Midwifing Death, Returning to the Arms of the Ancient Mother. She is also host of Santa Rosa cable TV show Wildfire. Leslie grew up in the Bay Area, graduated from UC Berkeley in 1969, and embarked on a deeply spiritual path during the historic Flower Child era. During that time, she began her shamanic initiations into the realms of mind, body, and spirit, and received many teachings and medicines from people, plants, and encounters with the spirit world. Leslene lived on the farm in Summertown, Tennessee for 11 years, where she married and gave birth to two daughters. The farm became a pioneer in spiritual midwifery, encouraging women to have home births and to take back the birthing process. They published a book titled Spiritual Midwifery. Leslene trained on the farm as a labor coach and assistant midwife, which served her in writing her book, Midwifing Death. After leaving the farm, Leslene returned to Northern California and began her work in shamanic counseling and teaching women's spirituality. She has touched many women through the years and continues to be a beacon for the mother energy, holding sacred space for counsel, ritual, teaching, speaking, and writing. She is dedicated to helping others in awakening to their true nature and to hearing the heart song of the mother, the divine feminine, in all her forms. Her two daughters, who are now grown and carrying on the transmission they received from their mother in their own form. She has called herself a Shimama, a midwife of the spirit, life, and death, and has served as spiritual adjunct to the medical community of doctors and psychiatrists in the capacities of both colleague and healer, and to the psychological community of therapists in the same manner. Leslene's newest offering, her feminist production Wildfire on cable TV, is where she interviews women who are contributing to our expanding awareness of not only our bondage under patriarchy, but to the right of women to say no more and to demand that life be different. Welcome, Leslene.
Thank you very much.
I can hardly hear you.
How's this?
Oh, it's better.
Okay.
Better. So glad you're with us, Leslene.
I'm very happy to be here with you.
My first question, given that this is Women's Voices, is how did your mother influence you in becoming the woman you are today?
Well, you know, I think that she was a woman who was really kind of caught in her times that, you know, that she was raised in and living in. But I think that she had a deep-seated sense about, I would have to say, the oppression of women in the world, even though she didn't really talk to me about it, but it was something that was in her being, and the way her caring about that manifested was a lot in her political work. She helped to create the Orinda Women's Democratic Club down in Orinda in the Bay Area, and that was in the 1950s, you know, and that was just for women, and it was a way to gather women together, and that was a lot for her to be doing because she had four children at the time. There eventually were five of us, but at the time she had four. So I was witness to her just reaching out like that and trying to create change in the best way that she could, but it was a lot in her heart that was kind of a transmission to me, a deep passion, I think, for equality and justice. Hmm. Yes, I mean, it wasn't perfect by any means, far
yes.
from it. But I can definitely say that was a deep presence in her that certainly has come alive in me.
Yes, such a model for you to see her doing that. It meant you could do that.
Well, it did. It gave me a kind of a permission that wasn't really, intellectual. It wasn't talked about, really. It was just kind of model. It was just there. And it was difficult because it was challenging for my father. And, she still pursued her own passion. You know, she wasn't completely consumed by being identified as a married woman with children. And I have a scrapbook, and I periodically will look through it, and there's there's some articles in there about the formation of this club, this Democratic club. And, you know, there's pictures of the women that were first involved in it, you know, and they're all identified as Mrs., you know, Robert Jones, you know, Mrs. Edward, whatever.
Right. They didn't have first names.
No, they didn't have first names. They didn't have their own identities. And my mother stayed with that in herself, and it was difficult for other people.
Uh-huh. In your biography, you talk about in your early years of shamanic initiations into realms of mind, body, and spirit, mm-hmm. and receiving many teachings and medicines from people and plants. And you speak with such deep knowing in your book, Midwifing Death.
Mm. Thank you.
Yes, and I'm wondering if this knowing obviously has come as a result of that early shamanic training.
Oh, indeed. Absolutely. Yes.
In today's world, and probably at that time too, there's no understood way for that initiation to happen. It's not it's not something that's talked about even.
You know, you're really right. In our culture, there isn't. I think that we as I think we're human beings are deeply tribal, and I think that in this cult, this Euro-Western culture that we have, we don't really have these kinds of initiations or rites of passage.
Right, that's just what I was going to say. The honoring of sacred medicine simply doesn't exist.
No, it
in
really
this
doesn't.
Patriarchal world.
No, it really doesn't.
And there are no rites of passage, as you say, for our young girls and boys.
Right.
Nothing that even suggests a higher consciousness.
It's true, and I am seeing the emergence of more and more people realizing that and creating groups and organizations that, you know, are creating these rites of passages. And it's very heartful to see that, to witness that.
It is, and it's, as I think, you know, I have grandchildren who are graduating from high school, and mm-hmm. there's no honoring of this. I mean, a graduation is far from honoring the what's really happening to them on a deeper level.
It's true.
And it's to suggest that there's something more than what we can see with our eyes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
It seems so important. You know, I interviewed Jean Houston, and I'm going to quote this from her because I thought it was so important. She says, "We are not encapsulated bags of skin dragging around dreary little egos." Isn't that wonderful?
Well, we're not, but we are.
Well, that's true. We're much more than that.
Yep.
Beneath the surface crust of consciousness, there is high creativity. There is high capacity for healing, high artistic sense. How do we tap into these other areas of ourselves so that we can bring a muchness of being to the necessities of our life and time?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so important to bring that up and talk about it and put it out there. And for many people, we're already aware of that, but it's hardly ever talked about in the public arena.
Well, it's true. And what comes up for me as I listen to you, Janie, is reconnecting with our Aboriginal memory or our Indigenous reality, you know, that all people have, you know. It's just that in this Euro-Western patriarchal culture, which has permeated the world, it's not just Euro-Western anymore, you know, I'll just call it patriarchal culture. I think that the truest Indigenous reality that I know about is something that I like to refer to as deep connection with our oldest mother. And that phrase, our oldest mother isn't mine. It comes from Lucia Birnbaum's work, and I know that you have interviewed her as well. She's just brought it out as our oldest mother, and I think that that is where our salvation lies, is in remembering that and going back to that and bringing it into now for ourselves.
Right. Let's talk about your show, Wildfire. I'm going to read just a little bit, may I, that's on your website.
Absolutely.
About it. Yeah. You write, the motivation for Wildfire, tell a vision for women.
Do you mind just saying it slowly? Tell a vision.
Right. Yes.
Thanks.
Came from a shared viewpoint of both the host, Leslene Della Madre, and producer, Kenny Mae Meyer, that the world is in deep trouble directly because of the way in which women are treated globally as second-class citizens. The show evolved out of the dedication both women have to helping women. By creating a television show that gives women a voice, both Leslene and Kenny have offered something to the world, which is a space for women's reality to prevail. Indeed, a very rare event. Because women's reality and culture are denied and denigrated, and because we live in a male-dominant patriarchal paradigm that is mindlessly and heartlessly destroying the world, it has become obvious that the only salvation for our species is women's wisdom. Wildfire brings to the audience a sense of realness and honesty that is sorely missing in the media that is controlled by greed. Truly feminist wisdom is that timeless nectar of our ancestors that was shared at the sacred wells where women gathered to be together. Wildfire is a modern-day well where women can gather through the ethers to find inspiration, truth, healing, and remembrance. That's very beautiful.
Thank you.
You know, we have a 14-minute wonderful segment from one of your shows with Dr. Mohini Giri.
Mm-hmm.
And I've included the introduction, so it will all be there.
Excellent.
But I'm thinking that when we started, I want to be able to continue it, and so I think we'll wait until 7:30 to do that that we can do the station ID. But tell me some of the other people that you have interviewed on your wonderful show that started out as a half-hour show and then became an hour weekly show.
Yes.
And you've done how many shows?
I believe it's around 75.
And you started just over a year ago.
Yes.
So you were thrust into the middle of all of it.
Yes. You know, it has been very challenging, and at the same time, it has called me to really just be in my truth and to just put it out there, and knowing that my commentary and views about things they're pretty rare.
And controversial.
And very controversial. And so I just accept that, well, that's my place in the world, and that's my place in the scheme of things, and so that's what I do. I just bring that through and the best I can.
Good for you.
Thank you.
You're such a model. You're a wonderful model.
Thank
Leslene.
You, Janie.
Yeah, you really are. You dare to say it.
Well, I do, on one hand, and on the other hand, you know, there are so many women have been saying it for so long. It's just that we don't really, in a patriarchal society or culture, or if you can call it a culture, I sort of tend to not call it a culture. Mess is what I call it. You know, one of the foundations of it is to keep women from being visible, you know, or even in existing.
Yeah,
that's certainly evident by the Inquisition in the Middle Ages. That, you know, we've been taught was the Renaissance. Well, it was kind of a Renaissance for men, but for women, it was a Holocaust. And, you know, that's never taught. It's never talked about. And that really is deep in our psyches, you know, that experience that's not really recognized as, you know, the Holocaust that preceded the Holocaust of World War II. So I feel that women have been saying it and speaking it, and the truth about women and women's reality, which is all people's reality. It's not just for women. It's for life, because we're the life givers. And that you know, the Council of Grandmothers in the Iroquois Federation, which is what our Constitution is modeled on, you know, everybody understood that it was the Council of Grandmothers who were the elders that would guide the community. You know, our Constitution makers left out that council when they made our Constitution. You know, so women's voices have, our truth has been here. It's just been really denied. So I feel like I've been doing this for a long time, maybe lifetime after lifetime, you know.
Indeed you have. You interviewed, among other people, the group Bell the Cat.
Yes, the music, yes, the band. Uh-huh.
Yes, that was wonderful. That was a wonderful segment.
Thank you.
I see them performing, or I see emails about their performing in this area, so that's why I mentioned them in particular. I also want to say that your interviews, a number of them anyway, are going to be available at the Fort Bragg Library,
yes,
and they can be checked out.
Thanks to you, Janie. Thank you.
Yes.
Really, thanks to you.
And also, there are now 9 of my interviews there.
Excellent.
So I hope people will take advantage of that. You know, I listened to something that I've interviewed several months or a few years ago, and I'm totally mesmerized by it. It's like, you know, those extraordinary women that I'm speaking with, including you, it's just such a blessing to listen to it. It's just totally interesting.
Well, yeah, it's like going to the well every time, you know.
Yes, indeed. I'm going to break in here and say, okay, this is KZYX. This is Janie Reasoner. You're listening to Leslie De La Madre. Okay, I think now might be a good time, do you think, to listen to your segment with Mohini Giri?
Sure.
And the Widows of India.
Dr. Mohini Giri's work is featured in this movie, White Rainbow, which is a movie made about her and her work with the Widows of India. She is the chairperson of the Guild of Service and has been for 35 years. She is also the chairperson of the War Widows Association for 35 years. She has participated in 4 decades of volunteer social work in India and Pakistan. She recently received the Padma Bhushan Award. Padma Bhushan means the jeweled lotus, and that award is equivalent to the Congressional Medal of Honor in our country. She holds 8 honorary PhDs, and she is one of 1,000 women around the world to be nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. And those stories of those 1,000 women have been compiled and now are in a book called 1,000 Peace Women. Would like to just share with you a little bit about Mohini Giri so you can be a little more acquainted with her. Reaching out to the needy and embracing the afflicted has been life's singular calling for this tireless Indian woman. Born into a family of prominent civil servants, at 16, she married the son of the late Shari Vivi Giri, the former president of India. Giri experienced from a young age the privileges enjoyed by India's elite class. But rather than finding comfort in social prestige, She was increasingly troubled by the enormous social and economic disparities among India's vast population. The grim plight of widows especially distressed her. With the end of the Indo-Pakistani War of 1971, thousands of widowed women were left to fend for themselves. Giddy describes them as those in living death. She's the author of 5 books, Living Death, Trauma of Widowhood in India, Kanya, Exploitation of Little Angels, Emancipation and Empowerment of Women. Something I got off the internet is an article that is titled From Chattel to Free Women, mm-hmm. Empowering India's Females. Mm-hmm. So if you could share with us mm-hmm. a little bit about your inspiration and involved mm-hmm. in wanting mm-hmm. to help women.
Long ago, I was 9 years old, and one sudden day when my gardener came up and said that your dad has died. And I didn't understand the meaning of all that till I saw my mother standing on a stool. She was a bulky woman and standing on that stool wanting to change a bulb. And she wasn't able to do it. Mm. And she looked around for men to come and help her. And that's the first time really in my subconscious mind I knew what a woman's life would be if she's a widow. And that too in India. Perhaps it affected me without knowing about it. Mm-hmm. But after that, I was very conscious of the fact how she had to go to work, how she had to bring us up, the children, and how difficult it was to be a single woman in India.
Yes, indeed.
Later on, I had a guru in Shivananda Ashram in Rishikesh who was an eye surgeon. And he would do operations upon operations of the poor people, eye operations. And he would call me and say, little nurse, you sit down with this patient and see that this patient doesn't touch her eyes or take her to the bathroom if she wants to go. And this is the kind of social work that he put into me. So I think my inspiration comes from my mother and from my guru Shivananda. Mm-hmm. These two people did inspire me a lot unconsciously in those days. Mm-hmm. I must have grumbled. My mother said that I used to grumble, that why am I here? Why am I doing this? But somewhere perhaps it went and touched me. So that when I really turned my children, when I was 26 and the war started in India with Pakistan, and my mother-in-law was too old, and she said that you perhaps go and visit the hospitals. So she was the First Lady of India. And I went on her behalf to many of the hospitals, where in about 80 hospitals, soldiers would lay down their lives, asking me only to take care of those whom they leave behind. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started the War Widows Association mm-hmm. and widows work also. Mm-hmm. Although in my subconscious mind, it was always a priority. But that moment where I saw 20,000 women becoming widows overnight and young girls, that really shook me. And there was no turning back since then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In this article I'll read just a little bit here. It says, the grim plight of widows especially distressed her, referring
yes,
to you.
Yes.
With the end of the Indo-Pakistani War of 1971, thousands of widowed women were left to fend for themselves. Giddy describes them as those in living death. Could you talk about that a
yes.
little bit, this living death?
See, in India, it used to be a custom when a woman became a widow that she would also burn herself on the funeral pyre of her husband.
The sutta.
The sati, yes.
The sati.
Although the sati is prohibited by law, mm-hmm. but then it made me think when I saw all these living widows, it was a living death to them. That was a one-time death. Not that I advocate that.
Right.
I'm not advocating.
Yes.
But this is a living death because there is stigma attached to widowhood. Uh-huh. Even if you're going out with your brother, people will watch out from their balconies and say, look at that dirty woman, a widow, who's going around with her boyfriend. To even have a boyfriend is not, of course, widow remarriage is not permitted at all. Then there's a special attire that you have to wear. It's a white sari. Mm-hmm. And that comes from your own brother's house. Your own brother who gives you in marriage comes out with a white sari and tells his sister, now you're a widow, you wear this white sari. And she's relegated totally. Even today, the stigma, in some families is less, some enlightened families. Mm-hmm. But altogether, the stigma is still there. That is what we are fighting for. We are fighting for equal status, whether you are a widow, whether you are a single woman. So that is what we want, our equal status
equal
with the man.
Status.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Men don't have taboos when they become widowers that they can't get married.
No, they do not.
They can get married the next day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's simply not right.
Yes.
And this happens all over the world in different ways.
Yes, it does. You know, I went to a national conference in England. There was a lady called Margaret Owen, who is a widow there. And she's a lady, Owen. And she told me that in spite of her economic prosperity, mm-hmm. in spite of having the title of Lord and Lady, her husband was a lord.
Uh-huh.
But in spite of all that, she has also got difficulties.
Uh-huh.
So economic independence itself doesn't make you free from the social taboos.
Yes.
So in India also likewise, that even whether you're rich or you're poor, this stigma goes along with you.
Uh-huh.
Because it's inbuilt in our culture and inbuilt in our society. Till such time that we change the mindset of society, we are not going to get freedom.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why we do this show. It might be the main reason.
Yes,
give a voice to women and to really point out what is really happening to women in the world. My view is that if women are not free, no one is free.
No one, yes. My definition of empowerment is
mm-hmm.
I have no fear. The day I say that I have no fear, that is the day I'll be empowered. But how many women can really say that?
Yes.
That I have no fear, whether they're American or Indians or
yes.
Africans or wherever. You know, it's very difficult.
Yes.
And we are women and we have got a kind heart. So
we are
bonded. Our bonds are too deep to be
to be in fear, to live in fear.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful point. How do we help each other not live in fear?
Yes. Now, that is capacity building of women is very, very important to my thinking. And by capacity building, I don't mean a college education at all. It's not necessary to have that degree or it is to have skills of some type, some kind. And it is to build a self-confidence in you
mm-hmm.
that in front of a struggle that a man abuses you in the night, perhaps, you can stand up.
Uh-huh.
You know, this
uh-huh.
abuse goes on all over the world.
Yes, it does.
And women keep on bearing it day after day.
Yes.
And unless she has that in her, that I can stand against it,
uh-huh.
I have no fear. So we have to now train our women right from school level,
in
education.
Yes. As children.
And train our boys also as
yes.
children in school level
yes.
to say that this is the consequence of not respecting a woman. What
yes.
are the consequences of not respecting a woman?
Yes.
So we cannot delay it to say that my child should become old and then I'm going to teach him.
Right.
No.
It's too late.
Too late.
Yeah. So what happens to a woman in India if she stands up to, say, if it's her husband who's beating her?
Mm-hmm.
What happens to her if she stands
well,
up?
Well, first of all, the stigma was so great
mm-hmm.
that till today no woman would come out of her four walls and even complain.
Yeah.
She would think that if I say anything against my husband, it's a black mark on me.
Uh-huh.
And nobody would even agree with her. They would look down upon her
uh-huh.
as if she was a bad charactered woman.
Yes.
She became the person who was the bad person. She was no longer looked at victim. But fortunately now, our women's movement is very strong in
uh-huh.
India. Yes, I have been 50 years in that women's movement, and I'm very happy to see my young daughters and granddaughters take up the issue now.
Yes,
I'm now nearly going to be 70,
uh-huh.
and at this age now I feel so happy to see that our movement is in good hands
uh-huh.
of young people. And these girls are no longer standing up to this kind
good,
of a thing.
Good.
We have also enacted a law recently. This present government has enacted this law of Domestic Violence Against Women Act.
Uh-huh.
And in this, anything happens, even if you're in your bedroom, which will be taken, even he need not touch you. Even mental cruelty is taken as an act of violence.
Uh-huh. Good.
So this is a very good act.
Uh-huh.
We are making more and more women aware of it,
uh-huh.
that take recourse to this
uh-huh.
and come out in open and speak about
excellent,
it.
Excellent.
Yes. It will take a long time for this to go really to the grassroots
uh-huh.
level.
Uh-huh.
India is a big country now with a population of 1 billion. And 100,000. It's just touched, day before yesterday it touched 100,000. And it's a big country and a big problem. So to spread this message will take perhaps some time.
Yes.
But I was also the chair of the National Commission for Women. Mm-hmm. So as that was an apex body in the country where we formulate policies. So I was very fortunate in formulating such policies which will give access to women mm-hmm. for legal recourse.
Mm-hmm.
Legal literacy, legal recourse, mm-hmm. speedy justice to women. Mm-hmm. These were some of the things that we acted on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the major reasons why women face all this also is alcohol. Alcohol, maybe all over the world
yes.
it is something, but in India is more so. Because every second family, the man drinks himself to death and beats up his wife mercilessly. And the wife had no place to go. Because economically also she was dependent on this man.
Yes.
She had no freedom. And now we have enacted another law just recently, which will give equal property to women. And the moment she gets, and till now, the resistance from men was so strong that in agriculture we cannot give equal property. Because the theory was the woman gets married and goes away to another house.
Right.
So how can she have landed property of her father and how can she be a partner? Now we have done that also. We are hoping that things will very soon change. And one of the causes for widowhood also not to be in this state is because she has no property.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
that's one
yes.
main reason. Poverty and property.
Yes.
These are two things that really makes a prisoner of the circumstances.
Yes.
We still live in a patriarchal society.
Yes, we do.
Hmm? This patriarchal society to change is so difficult.
Yes.
You know, even now men say, I have allowed her to do such and such a thing. And I often wonder, who is he to allow? I mean, we can do it ourselves. We don't need to be allowed or not to be allowed. Believe me, most educated men also think that they are conferring a big thing by saying that I have allowed her to study, I have allowed her to work. It's not their allowance. It's not. And patriarchy now, of course, we are struggling with the female feticide. So we are struggling with it because it's not auspicious to get a daughter. You have to educate her, then give a big dowry when she's getting
yes.
married. She's a burden on the families. So it's a very big task that's in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
There are villages after villages in India which are wiped out totally of women. There are no women left. So the men are going out to other states like Assam and other places to get married to girls. Because this village in Haryana has decided that they won't have any more girls.
We have a beautiful mother. Her hills are buffaloes. Her buffaloes, hills. We have a beautiful mother. Her oceans are wombs. Her wombs, oceans. We have a beautiful mother. Her teeth, the white stones at the edge of the water. The summer grasses, her plentiful hair. We have a beautiful mother, her green lap immense, her brown embrace eternal, her blue body.
Look around you now, sing praise and
Hello, Leslene, are you there?
Hello.
Hello. What was wonderful to hear your interview with Dr. Girish. Her energy is quite extraordinary.
Yeah, she's an amazing woman.
She is.
Mm-hmm.
And her, she's amazing to see on your video, on your DVD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's this really wonderful animated Indian, full-bodied and beautiful sari and colorful woman.
Yeah, she's. Did she talk about the village that she's creating there?
No, we didn't. It was the first 15 minutes, so she was just. You were introducing her, and then we were talking about. She's talking about, of course, the women and the hardship of being a widow and what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got to the part of the villages where there are no women.
Right.
So that's where we left it.
Mm-hmm. People can catch that interview on the DVD. Maybe that's one we'll have to the library.
Yes, they also can get your interviews, can't they, from your website?
Yes, they can buy them. Yeah, they can buy the DVDs.
Mm-hmm. And your website is?
It's wildfireforwomen.com.
Okay, and that's F-O-U-F-O-R.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can't they also download them and listen or not?
No, I don't. No, they're not there in their entirety.
I see.
There's,
they could check them out.
Yes, there are. There's quite a few sound bites of different ones.
Uh-huh.
But not all.
Is that, then, do you have another website for your book?
I do. It's midwifingdeath.com.
Lovely. Could you say a little bit about, okay, the telephone number again is, if you're out of the area, it's 707-937-5103. Your daughters are doing something quite remarkable.
Yes, they are the Goddess Alchemy Project, which is an all-female music collective featuring poetics and I call it feminist hip-hop. I'm not exactly sure what they call it, but it is definitely feminist to me. It's cutting edge.
And it's hip-hop.
They're very good.
They are. And how old are they?
My daughters are 28 and 24, and then there's two other members. That one is 36, and one is also 25.
And they are appearing all over.
They are. They just, right now, for Earth Day, they're playing in San Diego, and they're unique because they bring in other women, you know, to play with them, and it's a real shared kind of reality. And they also have a clothing line and a book of their poetry out, and it's very empowering for younger women to see them. They get a lot of, like, teenage girls who really love them, who know all their lyrics, and
it's wonderful.
You know, yeah.
And are you doing some writing?
I am, actually. I've just started to write again after kind of a break, and so I'm resuming writing.
And can you tell a little bit about what you're writing about?
Well, it's kind of an addition to Midwifing Death. This is about really looking at it, celebrating life and transforming fear about death and where the fear comes from and how to transform it and how to really, you know, deal with fear in one's life, which of course means that if you do that, then death is not this scary proposition that patriarchy would have us believe. So a lot of the first book was a lot of historical information and research about the pre-patriarchal cultures and how they how people held life and death as really I would call the sacred circle. And this is how to really bring that into the moment, into present life.
And you also are are with people who are passing you.
I am. I haven't done that work in a while, but I definitely, I mean, I do different facets of it. You know, I actually did do something recently. I just wasn't with her when she crossed over. I spent time with her a couple of days before, and then I was invited to do her eulogy and her memorial. So I do different aspects of it. So it's hard to do it all, especially if I'm writing and then actually being active.
I'm sure it is.
In the field.
Yes, because you just, if that's happening, you need to be there.
Yeah, because it's midwifing, you know.
Yes.
And you have to be on call for that.
Yes. Could we name a few of your guests? I see Rhianne Eisler.
Yes, Rhianne Eisler and...
Josefina Lopez?
Yes, she did. She's the author of Real Women Have Curves, which was made into, I think it was an HBO movie. She was an original play, and then it became a movie. We did a whole series on hormone health and women and hormone health, bioidentical hormones. And we interviewed Dr. Warner, who works with women. We interviewed a pharmacist in Windsor, Mark Berger, and we interviewed a nurse practitioner, Elaine Weil, and all about that. It's another area that has really women just the knowledge isn't out there about women's health and bioidentical hormones. We interviewed you.
Yes, you did.
And you played your music and sang. And we also have done an interview with Janine Cannon, Tanya Brennan, who is the founder of the Purple Berets in Sonoma County, and some younger women. We've interviewed younger women. We interviewed two women who told their stories about their journeys with cancer. These are young women, 25 and 33. Listen to her talk. Listen to both of them talk was amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
Being young. You know, we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I wondered if there's anything else you'd really like to say in these last few minutes. This is your opportunity to make a statement about the world.
Make a statement about the world. Well, one thing that's happening currently for me right now is that I'm helping to create the Elders Panel the Harmony Festival. This is the 30-year anniversary of the Harmony Festival in Sonoma County, and I've really been working hard to get the focus to be on awakening the sacred feminine, because the elders panels that I've been to, mostly they're men, for one thing, and, you know, I'm just tired of listening to men talk, you know, without bringing in the feminine or women, you know, I'm just kind of over it, and so... I feel real good about this, because that means that all the elders that are coming will be asked to focus on the awakening of the sacred feminine. So I invite everyone to really awaken to the sacred feminine within them, because this isn't just about women. This is about that which births all of us, and the sacred feminine lives in all of us, and we are that. So... that's an invitation.
That's very nice. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Well, it's true. and it is springing up in all corners of the world.
Well, yes, and it's absolutely necessary. It's not just this little, isn't this interesting kind of thing. It's necessary for the survival of our species, in my opinion.
Yes, yes. Well, we can see how close we are to the edge. We're finally getting it all over the world.
I think so.
The catastrophes are greater and more profound.
Yeah, yeah.
More frightening, and yeah, the hunger and the riots and all of it. It's really
and I think more.
Dreadful.
Go
ahead.
And more women are really speaking out. You know, your program is really excellent for that, and there's just more women coming forth because it's time.
Yes, it is time. Indeed, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Leslene. It's been, again, wonderful to speak with you.
Thank you.
And it's WWW for Midwifing Death. It's WWW, what?
MidwifingDeath.com.
.com. All right.
And for Wildfire, it's WWW.WildfireForWomen.com.
Okay. Lovely. All right, Leslene.
Thank you, Janie.
Yes, yes, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you.
Blessings.
Blessings.
Bye.
Bye-bye.